Good morning. Oh, yes. I'm heard. So today we're going to look at this very long passage. We've been going through this series and looked at moments in the Gospels, whether Jesus is teaching something or modeling something explicitly to his disciples about loving others. And then we've considered what it could look like for us today. Today, I'm doing something similar but also different. We're going to look primarily at the story, but also some other bits, and consider the way in which Jesus acts and responds. So I'm not going to spend heaps of time unpacking the meaning of what he's saying about himself, even though that's one of the big reasons that John includes this story in his gospel. And in fact, this story is considered in John's gospel as Jesus' last great sign to show his glory and his identity and authority as the Son of God. But I'm going to unpack the nature of the interactions and consider what Jesus' intentions are so we can learn to follow him in how to get to speaking God's truths into a situation and into someone's life, and then how to speak when we do get that opportunity. Before I start, a quick story though. The Bells, they live in a Muslim-majority country, and they have a family of 7 children. So you can imagine getting ready in the morning is a bit of a challenge, just a little bit. And one day, they're getting ready to travel to the other side of the country where there's going to be an annual conference for Christians who live and work in that area. And so it's important that they follow the schedule to get to the bus that's going to get them to the airport, catch the plane. But that morning, things just were not happening, which was a bit surprising for them because you can imagine with 7 children, you have a good routine going. They thought that, you know, Satan obviously doesn't want us to get to this conference on time. And so we're just going to keep pushing through, trust God with this, even though we're not sure what's going on. And so they prayed and then they hurried out the door to get to the bus stop. When they got to the bus stop, lo and behold, there goes the bus. At this moment, you're probably feeling as frustrated as the dad. He was really not happy. What is going on? Why did God let this happen? A couple of minutes later, there's a man who wanders around and he looks at the dad. And he walks up to the dad and he says, I've been a bit worried that I'd miss you because I had a dream last night. God spoke to me and showed me your face, and I needed to find you, and he's led me here. What is God trying to tell me? This is a Muslim man in a Muslim country during Ramadan, and so at that moment you go think, yeah, what is God doing? And so we're in this situation at the moment with Mary and Martha. We see that Jesus knows what's going on. He seems to say that. If you look at verse 4 with me, Jesus says when he hears the news, this sickness will not end in death. No, it is for God's glory, so that God's Son may be glorified through it. I forgot to click at the 8:31 and I'm forgetting to this time. This is what I've called the message today, and hopefully that'll make sense as we go along. So Jesus says this. Jesus tells the disciples and later Martha exactly what's going to happen, and he tells us why. God is intentional in all he does. We might not know the exact ways in which he brings himself glory or through a particular situation, but that is his intention. And Jesus is about to show us that he always does it, whether or not we're expecting it, like Martha, even when Jesus tells her, or whether or not we can understand it like the disciples. But Jesus doesn't necessarily heal every person. And the people who are mourning with Mary a bit later in the story, so in verse 37, some of them said, "Could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying?" They're expecting Jesus to be the miracle worker they've seen him be, right? But Jesus doesn't. He doesn't just heal everyone. And that's because his primary objective is not to alleviate suffering. He was intentionally selective about his signs. And the story that these guys are thinking about might be the one in chapter 9. So if you flip back to chapter 9 with me, we have a look at this story here. There's a blind man, and Jesus is walking with his disciples, and they see him. They ask him, "Rabbi, is this man born blind because he sinned or his parents? In other words, is this punishment from God?" And what does Jesus say? Jesus says, "Neither this man nor his parents sinned, but this happened so that the works of God might be displayed in him." Jesus saw it as an opportunity to glorify God, to point to the fact that this man's past doesn't matter, but what does is his purpose, to see and display the glory of God. Jesus never took his eyes off of that. There you go, I missed the slide there. So, how can God be most glorified in this situation? That's a slightly different question from how can I relieve the most suffering in this situation, which is what the crowd that was with Mary were expecting. What are we most concerned about when we come to our neighbours, our colleagues, the lady across from us on the metro, the mum sitting next to us at the school office, the Facebook friend we've only met once but has been posting some concerning things recently? Are we more concerned with seeing God's glory in their lives and them seeing it? Or are we more concerned with relieving suffering, maybe even our own suffering, avoiding possible pain or awkwardness, inconvenience? When I was growing up, our household policy that my parents had was to avoid at all cost having a relationship with our next door neighbours. So you could be seen but not heard. And don't cause trouble for other people, but don't invest emotionally in other people. And so as a Christian now, I know that's not what I'm meant to do. But even when I meet neighbours for the first time, this old feeling comes back and I really have to fight it. Some of you know we moved into the area recently, back in November, and I didn't say hello to a neighbour till 3 months later. And how that happened was I was getting out of the car with my daughter Annika, and she is a full-on car trip because she likes to bring lots of things with her that she's never going to touch. And then when we go shopping, I have to carry all those things out and the shopping out of the car. So my hands are always full. And I'm always just thinking, got to get to the front door as quickly as possible. But I noticed that day, as I was making a beeline for the front door, this car pull in from the street into my next door neighbor's driveway. At that moment, I'm just like, "Ooh, I haven't said hello to a neighbor." I could have kept going because she hadn't gotten out of the car yet. So, you know, she might have not seen me. But I stopped and I walked over to her car. And awkwardness all inside my body. But I said hello. And I'm going to share a bit later why that was such a blessing. And I'm so glad I did that. But Is Jesus' primary concern yours? With so many concerns in our life, like getting the shopping into the house, so many activities in our daily lives, we need to cut some things loose so that we can be intentionally selective, say yes to things in the moment. What is it that we need to embrace so we can make Jesus' primary concern ours? How do we see moments as, oh, I wonder what God's going to do, rather than, oh, no, what am I going to do? What's going to happen? How do we see them as a privilege rather than as an inconvenience or awkwardness for us? Right. I think another helpful question is, who is God calling me to be in that moment, rather than what do I need to do? Recently we had a birthday party for my daughter when she turned 4, and we're at the end of the party, and you know, people are about to go, and you kind of, as the host, you've got these little party bags to give everybody, and so I wanted to be present for that, to be a good host, but I noticed kind of behind the bushes at the playground, my sister-in-law was standing by herself. And some of you might know, my brother-in-law recently passed away, and she's got 2 little kids, and it's been full on for her, but she's a real stoic person. We're not close, and I've only seen her in the context of family gatherings. I've never had a proper conversation with her about how she's going. And so I'm like, at that moment, I was like, who does God want me to be? The one who is a good host so people think I'm great, or the person who stands and sits with the brokenhearted? I go to my sister-in-law, and I'm not expecting anything because she's often really put together. I just sat, didn't know what to say. I just said a very half-hearted, how are you going? And all these things came out that allowed me to really listen to her that I'd not expected. So what does Jesus do? Let's look at verse 5 and 6. Jesus loved, so he stayed where he was. John does this to grab our attention. It's not what you're expecting. It's not what normal people would do. You would hope to read, Jesus loved, so he ran as fast as he could with his disciples to get to Bethany. Jesus could have spared Mary and Martha considerable pain if he had gone to Bethany as soon as he heard the news. He clearly loves them. But again, his primary concern was the glory of God. Ultimately, what does it matter if we bring temporary physical or emotional relief, if we cannot offer lasting relief for the soul? What good is it if we can go around and actually offer healing, even raising the dead, if we cannot help people to the place where they see the glory of God, see the face of Jesus so they can receive true life-giving healing, where they can find restoration and true peace for their souls? Do you believe that? That Jesus himself offers and is the better answer for our friends' financial fears, for people's concerns about their teenage daughter, for their grief over their lost spouse, their broken relationship? That is the only way we can make sense of this story. Can we really say that we are loving our neighbors as ourselves if we stop short at empathizing and trying to help them physically, but it isn't our intention and prayer to show them how Jesus is the better answer? If you're a parent, would you stop at that? Would you not want to tell them how Jesus is far better, more beautiful, and brings true hope into a particular situation? Annika's recently started to read social dynamics between kids. And one day she told me she was really sad because a friend of hers at preschool was playing with someone else and not her anymore. At that moment, yes, I was sad with her. I told her I was sad that her friend doesn't want to play with her. That's hard. But I also had to say, Jesus wants to hear about that because Jesus is the friend who always wants to be with you, Annika. If I didn't say that, I would not be loving her the way that I should. When I was studying to become a teacher, we went on pracs where you got to practice being a teacher. And I was there with this one girl from my cohort who, yes, didn't like me very much. And I suspect partly because I was a Christian. When we finished prac and were in a tute together one time, there were about 10 of us, and all of a sudden she bolted out. At that moment, I was like, oh, I really should listen, but I also feel like I need to go out there. So I did, reluctantly, because I'm like, oh, this girl, I don't know what she'll think of me. Someone else might have been better in this moment. But I sat down next to her, didn't know what to do, so I prayed, God, just help me out here. And she shared that her boyfriend tried to take his life that morning because the previous night, she felt, she had said something. She had almost challenged him to do that, and it had happened, but unsuccessfully. And she was overwhelmed with the guilt. I sat with her. I wanted to say, it's not your fault. That's what we want to say, right? When someone's overwhelmed with guilt. But that wasn't true. She realized that she had a part to play in that. What was true was the guilt was real. But what was also true, and God gave me this to say to her, was Jesus can do something with that guilt. To my surprise, she said, how? Tell me how. We just never know what God's doing, but we have to offer that better word to people. Jesus later on says in chapter 9, so after he tells the disciples he's going to show God's glory, is this blind man's purpose through his healing. He says, in chapter 11, he says to the disciples when they tell him not to go back to that place where, you know, people were after him, and that's where Mary and Martha were. He says, are there not 12 hours of daylight? And he gives them a little bit of a picture of light and day, and you're like, what's going on? And John loves to use light, darkness in his gospel, saying that right now they're walking in daytime, but if they're walking at night, they can't see properly. Earlier in chapter 9, when we see him heal the blind man, he also uses this idea, and he says in verse 4, chapter 9, as long as it is day, we must do the works of him who sent me. Night is coming when no one can work. While I am in the world, I am the light of the world. Jesus is saying, there's time to work now. It's time to act. There's time coming when you can't anymore. There's moments that we might go, oh, I've got something planned that I must do. But maybe, just maybe, the thing that you need to do is not the thing you've planned for, or the thing that you perceive needs doing. So, Jesus knew his time on earth was limited. And as we saw at the end of this story, Jesus probably knew that as soon as he had done something like this, the Pharisees would be trying to push for his going to the cross even more. Okay, and so we come to our next point, intentionally listening. Both Mary and Martha in the story, they say the same thing to Jesus. Do you notice what they say? If you had been here, yes, our brother Lazarus would not have died. But Jesus responds completely differently to them. Why? Do you notice the differences in how they're speaking, the context in which they speak? Jesus listens not just for words, but for the intention behind them. He listens for the thought or the question behind what is said. For Martha, notice she says in verse 22, "But I know that even now God will give you whatever you ask." What's going on for Martha? She's focused on exercising her theological trust. She's really cerebral when she processes grief. When Jesus responds, he's being literal. He says that Lazarus will rise again. But her response is again about focusing her hope on the resurrection to come. So Jesus takes that opportunity to affirm her hope, but also expand her understanding of himself and the resurrection hope that she has. What about Mary? We're told in verse 32, she rushes to Jesus and falls at his feet. If you picture that in your mind, like someone's trying to get to someone and they fall, there's so much emotion that's coming out. We know Mary from earlier exchanges. She is an emotional person. She's an in-the-moment person. There's great grief. She's in deep mourning and sorrow, and she wears it on her sleeve. Those mourning with her think that she's rushing to the tomb where Lazarus was. Jesus notices that and empathizes with those mourning. It says, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. Knowing the depth of the sin that is in our world should cause us more than anyone to weep with those who weep, to have genuine empathy, because we know something is not right, something is deeply wrong. Jesus follows their lead and asks where Lazarus has been laid. Jesus doesn't in this moment try to comfort Mary with words about how he's going to raise Lazarus from the dead like he does with Martha. He's literally and figuratively walking with her in her grief to Lazarus's tomb. And when they arrive there, Jesus satisfies Martha's belief that whatever he asks for of God will be done. Jesus could have said, "Lazarus, come out," at that moment, but he doesn't, because it's important for him to show who he is. In the same way, verbalizing our prayers for others is an opportunity to give God glory. Point to him, who he is, that he is concerned to show us he's willing and able. So when I drop off Annika at preschool, I know I've got a lot of Annika stories, but I guess that's my daily majority time spent, and I see God's work through that. There's this mum who drops her kid off at the same time usually, and one day I was like, oh, she's not here. I'm just gonna like hang around a bit, loiter in the playground. Maybe she'll come soon. And yet she comes not far after me, and I'm just like, hey, how are you going today? In the past, when I've gotten to know her, she's shared a bit. She's had a few back operations because she's had some spinal fluid leakage in her spinal cord and from complications of giving birth. And they've been unsuccessful surgeries. And that day she shared that she'd been told she can do another surgery to try fix it. But she was feeling very nervous and not very positive about it. And at that moment, I said, I'll pray for you. And I told her what I would pray for her. I said, I'll pray for you that God gives you peace about this surgery. She's not a Christian. She said, "Oh, that's nice, thank you." Just like, you know, someone might say, "Oh, I'll be thinking of you." I think, but a few days later, she messaged me. She said, "Oh, guess what? They've just told me my surgery's happening next week. I think it's an answer to your prayer to God, because I don't have time to be nervous now." If I hadn't verbalized it, she probably wouldn't have thought about God at that moment. So I'm really glad that happened. We see Jesus do some other things. So if you look at Luke 24, verse 13, just flick back a little bit. And if you've got a church Bible, this is page 1644. Jesus has risen from the dead. And there are two of some people who have followed him are walking on the road to Emmaus. And Jesus keeps them from recognizing him. They're talking about the things that have happened. And verse 15, as they talk and discuss these things with each other, Jesus himself came up and walked along with them, but they were kept from recognizing him. Why? Why does Jesus do this? He asks, "What are you discussing together as you walk along?" And then they kind of look at Jesus, and then it's like, where have you been? Have you been living under a rock, all the things that have happened? Jesus clearly knows, but verse 19, what things, he asks. What is Jesus trying to do? And so they articulate their understanding of the facts, what's happened. Jesus asks questions to draw out. He already knows what people are thinking, but for their benefit, he gets them to articulate it. These are intentional decisions to get curious, to listen for that something deeper. A couple of weeks ago, I was on my phone on the train on the way to Newtown to meet a friend. I was literally working on this talk, and the stop comes and a man comes on the train, and as the doors shut, he's like, "Ugh!" And I look up, because, you know, I was on my phone, and I look at him, I look at what he's looking at. He's looking at, you know, the stops coming up, and he realizes, I think, that his stop is not going to happen on this train. So I look at him, and he looks at me, and he's like, "Oh, it's frustrating, isn't it?" And I said, I can't remember the who said who, but I'm like, "Oh, are you going to Newtown?" I think he said that anyway. And he said, "Yes, are you going to Newtown too?" And I said, "Yes." And he's like, "Oh, it's not going, is it?" And at that moment, I'm like, "No. But, you know, it is what it is." And he says to me at that moment, "There's some serious Buddhist vibes coming out of you." And at that moment, I could have just laughed it off and said, "Yeah." But no, that was an opportunity for me to say, "Oh, well, actually, I'm not Buddhist, I'm a Christian." And his response to that was, "Gosh, how can you trust in a God with so many temper tantrums?" And again, I'm like, "Oh, what is true? What is true for me? I don't actually believe that God has temper tantrums. I think we might think them because we don't always understand what he's doing, where he's coming from, and we can't see where he's going with it." I guess because we were both sitting down now, looking at each other, I said, "You know, I didn't always think that about God." And so I started sharing how I met Jesus, how Jesus changed the way I thought about God. While this was happening, I'm like, "God, I hope you let me finish this story because you've given it to me now." At that moment, I think it made me see what a privilege, again, it is when we just slow down and tune in with someone and see what God's doing. So, Also, yes, in the Gospel of John, when we read the story, Martha's articulated the things that she believes are going to happen. Then Jesus says, you know, who he is. Then he doesn't need to, but he does. He asks, do you believe this about me? So that he could give Martha an opportunity to respond. Yes, I do believe these things. Or no, I don't, right? It's for her benefit. So what does this all mean for us? One, we should be making time to loiter with purpose. Don't cram your day with plans, lots of plans, one after the other. Try and make space for nothing as much as you can. Make space for something that God's got planned that you didn't plan for. But also be intentional. Make plans to actually loiter. This neighbor I told you about earlier, her name's Jeannie. She's a Christian. And after we met, I said, come have a cuppa with me and help me pick up all these bags. So we went in and she shared with me that she's noticed one of the neighbors on the other side of where I live has been living alone, and his wife has passed away recently. And so she goes on her weekly shop to Top Ride, and she's decided to stop outside his house for a couple of minutes, knock on the door to see if he's home, and he usually is, and just to check up on him once a week. And that turned into him joining her for his weekly shop. And I just thought, wow, like, that is a very intentional plan to loiter. maybe you have a dog that you walk. Next time, you know, if you might walk your dog at the same time every day. Maybe next time, rather than looking at your dog's poop, look up and see who else is around. Are they the same faces? This is also a wonderful way to just get to know people. I have seen you around with your dog at this time. I'm Anna, what's your name? It's never awkward to introduce yourself, even if you've seen each other a few times. It's always refreshing for people. But I'm not saying you have to do this all the time with everyone. In the same way Jesus was intentionally selective, we can be intentionally selective and trust that God will show his glory in those efforts. Something else that I'm learning to do is spend more time in my front yard, because that's a place where you can see people. And I don't do it all the time. I just pick a Sunday afternoon to do that. But that's also helped me have some more conversations. Get curious. Dave mentioned this in a few weeks ago, when it comes to interceding in prayer for others. But be eager about getting into a different conversation than from the one you might have intended to have. Just like you might on a road trip, you know, you don't make plans too much. You kind of want to have space to slow down, go onto that side road, explore that little part of town. Why don't we do that with people, with the same curiosity? And be prepared to share something deeper and real about yourself too. Be proud of the place that Jesus has in your life. It's very exciting. The creator of the universe has written you into his story. It's our privilege to share stories of how he has moved in ours. Sometimes people need us to model vulnerability, openness, how to share a story with them, because they don't have the language for it. And to see how Jesus speaks a better word into your life. Here we go. So these are some phrases, because I get very when I'm excited or nervous. I try to have just phrases to slow down my mind, and hopefully they could be helpful for you too. So when someone's saying something to me, it could be a very random thing to kind of do the detour to get deeper. I might say, why do you say that? Why do you think that? And it's just an opportunity to slow down and listen. Or if they've just shared something, you might say, it sounds like you were really hurt by that exchange or that experience. Why is that? And if they're not willing to share, you can share a time when you were really hurt. You don't have to have the same experiences as someone to share the same feelings. And you can share what that felt like for you, but also how having Jesus in your life made an impact. That's the same as the next one. I'm reminded of a time when I felt this way, and share your story. Or you can do what Jesus does. Jesus loves to respond in parables. You could say, you know, this reminds me of a story, and you could share a story from one of Jesus' parables. You could share it from anywhere in Scripture where you might feel has something life-giving for this person. And then at the end, don't just like stop at the story. Say, what do you think of this story? Like, why do you think I shared this story? You might not even know the answer, but you know, God might have something for them there. And lastly, as I was sharing earlier, Jesus tells Martha, tells the crowd that he's verbalized this prayer so that the Father can show who he is, who Jesus is. In the same way, it's never threatening to say, I'll pray for you. You're not asking anything of that person, but it gives you an opportunity to articulate something about God to them. I'll pray that God would, you know, and who knows how God might show that to them. I thought to end, Dan White, he wrote this book recently to people in the States who are, I guess, caught up in, you know, the political side of things are very divided in the US. And people can see others very easily as enemies just if they don't agree on something politically. And I love this quote. When you live in culture war mode, there's always a battle to fight, a side to take, and people to fear. When you live in God's kingdom, there's always a stranger to welcome, a neighbor to befriend, and an enemy to love. Sadly, we can very easily start breathing this idea of us and them when it comes to people around us, whether our colleagues, our neighbors, our physical neighbors, even our families, our biological families. We're told daily to fear others. Those who parent differently, those who smile at us, those who don't smile at us. But Jesus shows us how to engage with them for the glory of God. It's not about them, it's not about us, but for his glory to be revealed. And we need exceptional strength and vision daily, which only his Spirit can give. So I've got a prayer that we're going to pray together soon. It's something I do each morning when I wake up in bed. I just ask God to help me to be listening to him and to be sensitive when he's trying to tell me to do something. Before we do that though, I guess part of this series has been to help us understand our vision as a church, that we're shaped by the glorious love of God, and together that enables us to show that to one another. And I hope something from this can help you listen for a deeper conversation to speak life-giving words to one another. And then being able to do that with others. Hopefully in the next month or so, I'm going to be doing a two-hour workshop, which we might do on a Sunday afternoon, and then a repeat on a weeknight. So you might do it instead of your small group, or you could do it together with your small group, where we'll just look at more just practical ways of listening well so that we can speak Jesus' truths into someone's life. Not a gospel presentation, but just honing in on what's going on, the intention behind their words. So there'll be announcements for that. But let's pray together. Heavenly Father, give me a sensitive spirit that will be more in tune with your Spirit's leading today than yesterday. Give me your strength and your vision to make decisions with my limited time and resources, to love the people you allow me to cross paths with to your glory. Help me to sit with them rather than to keep walking at my own pace and my own path. Show me how, show me when, show me how to love my neighbors as myself, as Jesus intends, in new ways. In his name, I boldly pray. Amen.